Welcome to the VoiceOver Family Podcast.
Thanks, boys. Hey, I'm Amanda Sellers.
And I'm Mike Shirko.
We're full-time voice actors with over 2 decades worth of experience sharing how we went from working our day jobs
to building a successful and creative career in the voiceover industry.
All while working from home and raising our 2 boys, Beck and Trace.
Let's go have some fun.
Oh, yeah.
On today's podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, on today's podcast, we have a very special guest. He's an author, an incredible voice actor, and an all-around amazing guy, amazing talent, and really good at parkour, too. Welcome, Joe Zija. Hey, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today. You just have an incredible story. You're doing such amazing things. It's really an honor to have you here today. Can you give us some backstory on how this all began and how you became the voice actor and talent that you are?
Sure. I guess I've told this origin story a bunch now. My adult life was basically spent in the Air Force. I went to the United States Air Force Academy and graduated with a commission as a lieutenant in 2007. I spent 6 years active duty, and then I left active duty to become a government contractor working in DC, pretty much doing a lot of the similar stuff that I was doing in the Air Force, but now in a larger government capacity versus a Air Force capacity. I remained on reserve duty. And while I was working reserve duty one weekend, I happened to be talking to a friend of mine, and I said, you know what, I've always wanted to try voice acting. And I'm thinking cartoons, anime, video games, because I'm a gamer, and like that kind of stuff sort of interested me. Never in a million years did I understand that it was an actual career. And he said to me, well, my company used to hire talent off of this website. Why don't you check it out? So I did. I had some equipment at home, and I understood the basics of sound recording because I was a hobbyist musician. And So I booked the first thing that I auditioned for, which was a cartoon panda speaking Arabic to children.
Nice.
You know, that's pretty much everybody's first job. I had some Arabic experience from the Air Force and applied it. And I was like, wow, that was really cool. How do I do that again? Really, it just snowballed from there. I started building myself a home studio. I started getting in touch with some people in the community. J. Michael Collins was instrumental in my business success, just being very gracious and giving me the information and encouragement I needed to understand that, yes, this was, in fact, a real job, and you could, in fact, make a career out of it. I had always thought that it was going to be my writing that was going to knock me out of government work, because I never wanted to be like a 9-to-5 guy. Ultimately, within 16 months of me discovering voiceover, I had quit my job.
That's a really incredible story. And J. Michael Collins is an awesome leader in our business and in our industry and helping other talent as well.
That he is.
I just think that's so fascinating. Were you into theater and acting and when you were a kid, or was it just, you know, how did that look like?
I had absolutely no theater experience or acting training or anything like that.
Wow.
When I was in high school, when I was a senior, I did the fall play. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was it. The only thing that I can remotely relate voiceover to was very randomly when I was at the Air Force Academy, I got picked to be basically like the parade announcer.
Okay.
So like when we would do our cadet parades, occasionally I would be up in the podium being like, and now approaching from your right is the cadet squadron, like that kind of thing. So I guess that was I didn't really put that together that was actual voiceover.
Right.
Yeah, it was just kind of like I was reading the parade script. That was it.
That's funny. That's like when I was in high school, I used to do the announcements, the daily announcements.
There you go.
And it was so fun, you know, just thinking back to the things that you used to do. So now I can't help but notice this crazy gig that is just blowing up, the Nintendo gig. Can you tell us about that?
So I moved to Los Angeles in 2015 after I quit my job to try to hunt the bigger work, which is for me, the bigger work meant games and animation, the storytelling stuff. I'm a big proponent of storytelling in different medium, in media. And I love video games, always have. That's really just tangential to the fact that I ended up booking one of the lead characters in this game called Fire Emblem Three Houses, which, if you're not familiar, ended up being, I think, Nintendo's biggest launch of the year. It was like the number two selling game in the United States. It was the number one selling game in Europe when it came out. Fire Emblem is a long history of titles that are very story heavy, very character heavy. It's a strategy RPG. I played one of the Fire Emblems before.
Cool.
But you know, I was familiar with the game.
Right.
And and it absolutely blew up when the game came out and I made my announcement. I had to keep it secret for such a long time, as I'm sure you understand.
Of course.
Yes. And I slowly knew as we got closer to release that this was going to be big.
Wow.
I never thought it was going to be this big. And now it's like, yeah, it's consumed my career, which is not a bad thing.
So now, like, congratulations. Like, thanks. That's so incredible. And it's so awesome to see you. I look at you as a trailblazer. Like, we all kind of started voiceover around the same time. Mm-hmm. And all of us have, you know, done really well in our own paths. But when I see you, Joe, I just see you've got something. Like, are you going to do, like, on camera too? Like, I just see you being like this super famous guy.
I have absolutely no, usually, like, every couple of months, someone will ask me that question. I have no desire to do anything on camera. You know what?
Okay.
Like, I don't mind the on camera process, like, for filming itself, but I could never handle the audition process.
Right.
Like, the idea of getting up, driving to Manhattan Beach,
like,
putting on pants.
Yeah.
you know, like that kind of thing, just so I can be in a room with 40 other actors who are all staring each other down and like, forget that. I'm happy on my side of the glass.
Absolutely.
But if someone was like, hey, I want to cast you as the lead in the next Avengers movie, I'd be like, okay, sure.
Okay. And
I just don't want to work for
it. Right. That really could happen. So what does a day in the life look like for you now?
You know what changes? This week was super slow, which was a wonderful thing because last week I was pretty much booked from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. every single day, nonstop, traveling to different studios for different projects. I had, I don't know, three or four video game sessions last week and a bunch of commercial sessions as well as like, you know, I still maintain... I never let go of my corporate clients. They're my bread and butter. I treat them like the emperors that they are.
Right.
Because they are the bedrock of my business is still my corporate clients. Commercials have taken a bigger chunk and LA work has taken a bigger chunk, but my corporate clients, they're still the rock stars in my eyes.
Right.
So, you know, it kind of depends. This week I had some time, in contrast, this week I had some time to build up some things with the Fire Emblem fan base. I'm running a Twitch show now twice a week where basically I'm playing the game along with fans and talking with fans. It's really cool. I usually have like 1,000 people show up every time I do it.
That must be so fun.
It is. We have a great time. And it's a great way for me as an actor to reclaim the video game because I am a gamer.
Yeah.
And when you act in a game, you somewhat ruin the experience for yourself. But it's a way for me to kind of like, well, no, I'm going to play the game and I'm going to interact with fans. And it feels like I get that experience back. So it's really cool.
That's awesome. So now does it kind of feel like gone are the days when you're at home auditioning all day long and it's kind of taken a different turn? Now you're in studios and driving around LA.
You know what? It's very different. There are still days where, you know, there are days where I am booked for four or five sessions and all of them are from home.
Mm.
And there are days where I'm booked for two sessions and one of them is in Santa Monica at 9 a.m. and the next one's in Burbank at 1 o'clock. So I'm gone all day, even though it's only two sessions. So it really depends. I would still say probably 70% of my work is done from home.
Wow.
I built my own studio here. I've got like a built-in booth designed by George Whittam, who I'm sure you know.
Absolutely.
So it's this, I have my own studio now.
That's really cool.
Rented it out to other people and yeah, it's great. I like my current battle rhythm is good.
That's great. I know your studio has evolved over the years. What did you do with your studio bricks?
I sold it.
Wow.
I mean, within minutes of me putting it on that, like, hey, I'm selling my studio bricks. It was like, I'm putting a deposit. Here it is.
Wow. Wow.
Studio bricks are amazing. And I will recommend Studio Bricks to anyone over pretty much any other booth.
But now your booth, now your studio, it's probably like, I mean, anything better than Studio Bricks, I mean, that's got to be next level.
It is
to work
next
with
level.
George
it's,
as well.
It's professional level. Like, yeah.
So Now, I've read that you have your third book coming out. You're also an author. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I was an author long before I was a voice actor, although I didn't publish my first book until after I quit my job. I've been writing for a long time. My current trilogy is called the Epic Failure Trilogy. Consists of three books, Mechanical Failure, Communication Failure, and the upcoming final book, System Failure, which is going to release on September 17th. I don't know when this podcast is going to come out, but September 17th is the release date. And it's a sci-fi military humor novel, like Catch-22 in space. So it's very, very, very loosely based off of my own experiences in the Air Force. I lampoon a lot of the stuff that the government does and the military does. And it's just this zany, wacky comedy about a guy who doesn't really want to do any work and it doesn't go well for him. That's really the size of it.
That's cool. Now, do you have more books in your brain that you want to write? Are you going to focus on voiceovers? Yeah.
Ideas are cheap, right? So I have probably like 10 novels in my brain. It's just a matter of picking one. I am about 40% through another novel that we haven't pitched to editors yet, outside of the Epic Failure trilogy sort of universe. Completely different kind of novel. And then I have a couple other projects that are kind of like I'm waiting for a green light from, you know, like kind of writing in another person's universe kind of thing. Still waiting for the deals to get solidified on that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, writing for me is very much a secondary thing. It dollar for dollar, it can't hold a candle to voiceover. The publishing industry in general isn't as strong as the voiceover industry as far as earnings go. So it's difficult for me to justify spending a large amount of time on novels and novel promotion. I really only do it when I have something coming out. Otherwise, I don't put a lot of energy into promoting the work. In a good day, I'll get an hour of writing a day. Lately, since Fire Emblem came out, most of that extra time has been sucked up by Fire Emblem and making sure that I'm engaging with the fans in fun ways and using that opportunity.
That's so cool. You're doing a really great job at that.
Thanks.
So, noticing you, like watching you over the years and how you've grown, is there a business plan that you, I know you probably didn't have a business plan, but you're so driven. Like where does that come from and how do you map that out?
So I don't know that I ever really had a business plan. Every once in a while I'll sit down and I'll make like a, and it's usually in conjunction with something else. I went to a course, Kalmanson & Kalmanson is a casting agency in LA. And
I did that one.
Okay. Yeah. So I went to their class.
Working Pro.
Right. The Working Pro class. There's an exercise that you do where you make like a 5-year plan or something like that. Or you put goals for like every week, whatever it is. Every once in a while, I'll do one of those. But usually I write them and then forget about it. And it's just, I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants. I think in general, I tend to be very flowy around whatever is happening. So right now, my Twitch channel exploded to the point where I was completely unprepared for how successful my Twitch show was going to be. So right now, it's just kind of like, okay, that's happening. I'm going to flow this way. Now I've got TwitchCon coming up in a couple weeks. Suddenly, I'm going to San Diego for 3 days to mix and mingle with some of the most successful Twitch streamers in the world.
Wow.
And hang out and talk about building business and stuff like that. So, you know, like I'm kind of going where the universe is gently pushing me. VoiceOver was the same way. I had no intent of making VoiceOver a career, but then I start looking at the numbers and what I can do from home. And, really my business plan has been to flow and then identify a target and go after it.
That's really cool. So now as you're growing and like, how are you going to scale? Do you have a team working for you? Is there people that you need to come on board now? Delegation? What does that look like?
I do. I've had people working for me since March of 2016. I hired my personal assistant. So it started out with a personal assistant when like I just couldn't manage, especially when I got to LA, and LA jobs are a lot more temporally demanding, right? They need you in a studio and they need you there for X amount of hours, right?
Right.
I wasn't used to that. My clients weren't used to that. So I'd be gone away from my computer for 4 hours and I needed somebody to kind of back me up. And so I eventually hired my personal assistant who is marvelous. She's worked with me for over 3 years now. She manages all of my bookings. She manages my calendar.
Wow.
My invoices. And so, like, basically, when I get in front of the mic, I bring up the cue that she has made for me. I read it down. I submit it, and I walk away.
Wow.
I try to... there's a great book out there, Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek.
Yes, I've heard of it.
And that kind of like, that changed my business model in that anything that doesn't require my actual, like if it doesn't require the Joe Zegas signature on it, I shouldn't be doing it.
Wow.
And I try to do that as much as I possibly can. So the more and more Kelly, who's my assistant, have gotten to work with each other, the more and more stuff I've pushed her way to the point where sometimes she's cutting and submitting auditions for me.
Wow.
Or, you know, it's just like, if it doesn't involve me talking into the microphone,
yeah,
I generally don't want to do it. On the other side, you know, like I've also hired a couple of people to help me start editing my videos that I do on my YouTube channel. I've got moderators that I work with for my Twitch show that help me run that. And so, yeah, I am starting to build up quite a bit of a team.
That's amazing. Yeah. And how did you find Kelly? I need a Kelly.
So Kelly, I found through Celia Siegel.
Okay.
She's actually a good friend of Celia, who used to be my manager.
Yeah.
And she actually used to be in the business in LA and then moved away and wanted to kind of dip her toe back in again. And it was just this serendipitous opportunity. So I found somebody who definitely knew the LA side of things, but wasn't as familiar with like the online corporate stuff. So we kind of achieved that sort of symbiosis there. And she still gives me advice on stuff. So she's not just an assistant. She knows the business.
That's really cool.
Extremely helpful.
That's amazing. And I really would love something like that as well. What did your clients think of someone else answering your emails though? Because I always feel like I've got such a, you know, personal connection with my clients. I wonder what that would be like.
You know, I was worried about that at first too, and it takes anybody who's going to hire some help, expect there to be some growing pains while you figure out how to delegate and figure out,
right,
you know, how to get hands off on stuff. I had some experience in the Air Force as an officer. You know, I had lots of people working underneath me, so it was my job to make sure everybody knew what their role was, and then I just kind of, I managed the experts. I wasn't supposed to be an expert in everything. And that's kind of how I try to run my team, is I understand that I'm not the expert in everything. I don't try to be the expert in anything. And as far as, so actually that was pretty long tangent there, but your clients are going to understand.
Right.
There is, as long as, you know, Kelly is as quick as I am. She's polite, you know, and if they ever want to talk to me directly, they can always pick up the phone and call me, and I'm always there for them. It's,
I love,
you know,
that.
I didn't have any problem with anybody, right, being like, oh, I don't want to talk to Kelly. There were some, like every once in a while we had to get workflows because my agents don't talk to me really either.
Wow.
They're going through Kelly as well, because if an agent calls me and it's like, Joe, can I get on your calendar? My answer is, I don't know. I don't manage my calendar. You got to talk to Kelly. So making sure that people knew, you know, what the chain of command was, so to speak, I guess. You know, that had a little bit of growing pains, but as long as you set clear expectations with people, 99% of the time,
yeah,
it's gonna be okay.
I love that. That's amazing advice. Are you still working with any coaches, or just no time for that? Like, can you, just even when you were working with coaches, did you have coaches for different genres, and how often did you train?
So, I went through a couple of different coaches throughout my career, but never very intensely. The only coach I worked with, what I would do is on like, if I was building a demo, right? I was like, I want a demo. I would contact a coach and be like, hey, let's work on my skills and then produce a demo for me. I did that with Dave Walsh. So like Dave Walsh coached me in promo for like 3 months, and then we built a demo together. And then we kind of like parted ways. I didn't coach with him anymore. I did the same thing with David Lyerly, who used to be at Atlas, actually, in LA, and then moved to New York to be kind of like a consultant kind of role, and then moved back to LA, and he's now the head of VO at Riot Games, which produces League of Legends.
Very
so
cool.
before he moved back to Riot, I was like, David, I want a video game demo. I know you're a video game guy, because David coached me on commercials a couple times and promo a couple times, but we didn't really like link up there. And then we figured out that we were both major video game nerds. And I was like, okay, how do I make a video game demo that shows that I am not only an actor, but a gamer? And he's like, okay, here's how we're going to do it.
Cool.
So that's, we worked together for months and then built the demo together. And that's it. I really don't do a whole lot of coaching or classes. I'll dip in and out to some of the casting agencies around here just to kind of like keep my finger on the pulse of the commercial.
Yep.
Read that kind of thing. Every once in a while, if I haven't met a casting director, I'll pop into a workshop.
Nice.
Sometimes those are effective. Sometimes they're not. A lot of times, you know, at least you get a good sense of what everyone's around you is doing, because in VO, as I'm sure you know, a lot of times we're very isolated. We don't get a chance to work with other people or even see other people work, which,
yes,
you know, is to our detriment, because even if someone isn't good, you're going to learn something from them. Good, like, I mean, good in the objective sense. They're probably doing something that you're,
right,
going to find interesting. So I'll do workshops just to hang out with other actors and hear them work.
That's really cool. I've definitely found that through teaching and starting to coach is just learning so much from people that are learning. Would you give any what advice would you give to someone who is just brand new? And one thing that you said that was really inspiring was you weren't an actor as a kid. You weren't in theater. It was all, you were in the Air Force and voice acting was interesting to you. So I love that, you know, you don't have to be a performer from a young age. So what advice would you give to someone who, you know, might be a pharmacist who wants to get into voiceover?
Everyone asked me the alternate version of this question that people ask me is like, how are you successful in LA? And I said, I was successful before I got to LA.
I love that.
Make sure that you have, yes, make sure you have your stuff together before, yeah, you go taking this dive. I mean, like, I hear so many stories of people that come out to LA and then wash dishes for 30 years trying to like, don't do that. Have a, yeah, like pick your A plan and then work on your B plan at the same time. Now, again, I don't know anybody that's had my path to voiceover. So me giving advice on how to build your voiceover career may be stupid. You know, like, nobody's done it this way that I know of.
Yeah.
But try everything. Keep a stable job. Keep something that, you know, casting directors can smell desperation. So, like, if you need this voiceover job because you can't pay your bills, it's going to show up.
Yeah.
Nobody wants a desperate actor. Have something else. Have something so you could walk up to a casting director and be like, I don't care if you pick me or not. This is what I think this sounds like. You know, and just try everything. Try everything. Have a backup plan and try everything. And go with the flow.
Absolutely. I love that. I remember your website years ago. I can't remember how it went, but it was something like starving artist swagger. What was that term?
Starving artist swagger. None of the baggage.
I love that.
So that, I guess that's actually pretty fits in. I didn't even think about that. Fits in nicely with what I'm saying. Like, you want that artist swagger, but you don't want that, like, all the emotional crap that comes with being like a starving artist and all the things that come with that. Yeah.
And so we get emails as well. Someone who, like, I just lost my job and I want to get into voiceover. I'm like, this is not going to happen.
That is not the time. That is not the time to pick up a new skill. Like, if you never tried it before, it's like, oh, I just lost my job. I'm going to go become a horse rancher.
Yeah.
Have you ever touched a horse? No. Like,
exactly.
Well, come on. It's don't do that. I get it.
It's cliche, but they think, well, I've got a nice voice and you get to work from home. It seems fairly easy, but, you know, you really got to learn the ins and outs of everything. And we have students that literally have been blowing up, like making thousands of dollars, like their first week out of class. And it's those people, you know, that have that drive and that determination, that want it no matter what.
Yeah,
so
and
those
I bet
are
they
the ones that are gonna
off. I bet they didn't, like, they didn't just they fall into
absolutely
it, you know. I look a lot like an overnight success because of my quick transition. I have auditioned to date, and I keep track, over 50,000 times.
Oh wow.
I have auditioned 50, over 50,000 times in the last 6 years. So don't go and tell me that I'm an overnight success, and don't tell me that you think you can do it in 10 auditions. Getting 10 auditions a week from your agent, think you're going to, like, blow up. It's not going to happen. You got to get out there and you got to do the work.
For sure. And did you find, and I found this from, you know, back in the day as well, auditioning a ton, that you learn from the auditions that you're doing?
Sure. Yeah. I, you know, that's the way a lot of my life has gone. I have no formal training in something, so I just start doing it. And then I kind of you know, I pick up the finer points later. And a lot of ways that it's very freeing, because in voiceover, I never had that thing like that I see a lot in LA where it's like, okay, you have to go to class, then you have to make this demo, then you have to make this demo, then you pitch the agent, then you pitch the agent again, and then you wait for 3 years until an agent discovers you. Screw that. You know, it's like I wasn't hampered by any of that advice, because I honestly, very plainly, had no idea what I was doing. So I just intuited my way through it. Someone booked me on something. I'm like, okay, they like that. I wonder why they like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to take that. And this job looks really similar. I'm going to apply these techniques to this job. Okay, that worked. And it was just like, you know, 50,000 is a lot of iterations to figure some stuff out.
100%.
There might have been a more organized way to do that. But it wasn't for me.
Do you have like a spreadsheet, or how do you keep track of all your auditions?
All the casting websites typically keep those numbers, and I tend to ask them at the end of every year. I'm like, hey, how many did I put in? And then some websites, I'll be like, hey, how much did I earn? And they'll be like, okay, this is how many auditions you put in. This is how much money you made. And I'll be like, okay, great.
Wow. So along this journey, this short but long journey, any mistakes along the way that you're like, okay, I would have navigated that differently? That you can think of?
That's an interesting question. Mistakes I've made probably in the way I think I handled some of my agent relationships. It was very difficult for me to integrate this, like, I am full freaking throttle VO guy. And then I kind of came to LA and I expected agents to be like, that's a full throttle VO guy, let's do this. But I found that agents weren't really like at my pace. So like I would be like, I'm here. And they're like, no, you have to slow down. You have to like, you need to relax. And I'm like, I am not here to relax. So, you know, finding it took me 2 years to settle on Atlas. And figure out that like I needed a team that reflected my business model. Do I think it was a mistake? I don't think it was a mistake. I had to learn.
Right.
I learned a lot from the agencies I was at before I was at Atlas. But I would say like that was the thing that probably gives me the most pause, where I was like, I wonder if I could have handled this differently. I wonder if I could have achieved this little niche that I'm in quicker if I had done things a little better.
Gotcha.
Or, you know, like if I had managed those relationships better or come into it with a different set of expectations, but who knows?
Right. I think me and you have the same kind of, go, go, go mentality. And then sometimes it's like, well, maybe patience might be, you know, something that, well, for me, sometimes I need to be more patient. It's just like, no, let's do this.
And you know, it'll happen. I've told this story a lot lately because people keep asking me about like the whole Fire Emblem thing.
Yeah.
And how like, it's like, wow, suddenly you got so good at social media. And I was like, well, no, I spent the last year and a half agonizing over the fact that like I would lose jobs because I essentially wasn't popular enough. Like it was one of that conundrum where like I wasn't popular enough to get job X, but I couldn't in order to like, I needed job X in order to get popular.
Oh.
So it was, I spent the last year and a half basically learning YouTube and Twitter and like how to make videos, how to edit videos, how to do some Photoshop stuff, how to make things, what looks good here, what looks good there. And then all of a sudden when Fire Emblem hit, I was ready. It wasn't like I was an overnight success. I call it engineered serendipity, which is not my term, but I can't remember where I heard it, right? You need to be constantly prepared for that serendipitous opportunity. And when Fire Emblem hit, I knew exactly what I was going to do with fans. I knew how to make a cool video that I thought everyone would like and mic it properly and cut it properly and add license-free music and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's all about being prepared.
That's like such a prime example of, you know, kind of like the law of attraction, or, you know, like when luck and hard work equal opportunity, like you created that, you made that happen. And then, you know, the success followed. That's really cool. Well, you were in Incredibles, and I mean, you've been doing lots of really cool things. Can you tell us about Incredibles too?
You know, Incredibles was kind of like a lot of people when they're like, well, how did you do X? And it's so simple. I auditioned for the part and I got it. It was so simple. I got an audition for my agent. I read for a bunch of different things and they brought me in. They actually brought me in for 2 days because I read a bunch of different parts. Originally, I was supposed to be one part, and then they eventually moved that over to another actor and then put me in a different part. So I was there 2 days working with the director, Brad, who was fantastic, and I ended up getting to meet the principals.
Wow.
One day while they were all kind of hanging out, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
That's really cool. So now do you feel like with this buzz that, you know, those opportunities are going to present themselves more and you're going to be like Disney star? What do you see happening? What do you want to happen?
I mean, I hope so. I've recently been working on this show, Lego City Adventures.
Oh, cool.
Which I guess apparently is the number two show in its age group in America, like right behind SpongeBob.
Wow.
And I'm in every episode as one of the lead characters.
Where can we watch this?
That's Nickelodeon every Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Wherever you are. So Lego City Adventures is it's a hysterical show.
I'm sure we've watched it.
Maybe you have. So
I'm usually doing dishes when the boys are.
Yeah,
my boys are watching Legos, but that's cool. So yeah, you're already in those dream jobs. That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm having a ton of fun. I mean, I would hope that, work begets work. We all know that. I would hope that some of the hype that's building now just kind of gets my name out there. And then instead of, what I always tell about people who complain about the idea that, oh, they just cast the same people over and over again. They do because you're a risk. They don't know you.
Mm.
It doesn't matter, like, if you come into the booth having made X amount of money, they've never worked with you before. They may never have seen you before. You're a risk to them, which means that when they bring you into the booth, they're putting their reputation on the line to their clients who basically have their fate in their hands. So, it's my job to just work on not becoming a risk. Now, maybe they'll be like, oh, yeah, I heard of that guy. He's good in this. Go ahead and bring him in. Not so much like, Joe Zija. Well, this audition sounds great, but can he do it for 4 hours?
Right.
It changes the way you're perceived.
So what would some tips be to make yourself not a risk?
That's where I think the patience thing comes in.
Hmm.
All of these little relationships that I've built over time, I plant seeds everywhere.
Hmm.
I'm always trying to like see what irons I can put in the fire because you never know what's going to... what's going to pop up. Just kind of like get out there and do everything, whatever your anxiety can stand. Get out there and meet people, go to some stuff, do some workshops, reach out, do something funny online, just try everything. Eventually you're going to find something that you're good at.
Very cool. And how do you balance work with your family life? You've got a beautiful family. Tell us about that.
I balance my work with my family life by having my wife remind me that I'm not balancing my work and my family life. My wife has been my absolute rock for the last 6 years in supporting me and understanding when it's time to push.
Right.
And when it's time to say, Joe, you're pushing too hard and we haven't seen you in 3 days.
Right.
So it's good because I've always been an overly ambitious, driven person. And she's really good at pulling me back and being like, hey, why don't we go do some? And she doesn't like scold me. She'll just be like, hey, let's go out tonight. And I'll be like, great, let's do that.
Right.
It's that kind of thing.
That's very cool. Now, have your kids gotten behind the mic yet?
I mean, only like my daughters every once in a while will go into my booth. They'll wander into my office and they don't really know what to do with the microphone for the most part.
Yeah.
Because, they don't really get to see me work. They don't very often get to see my work after because, they're not playing the games I'm in and stuff like that. But
they could watch Lego City.
Yeah, no, they haven't been behind the mic. I know Beck has been behind the mic, right?
Yeah, he's actually did like a Lego Star Wars and, in Sesame Street. He's on Netflix show. Like he's been doing some cool stuff.
That's great.
Do you think your daughter would get into it or you're just not going to worry about that at the moment?
We don't know. We'll present the opportunity. Ultimately, like I'm wary about having to mix that life with like a regular school kid life. Because I've seen, there are lots of kid actors out here.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
know lots of actors that were kid actors. And I hear lots of stories about how like you know, it was hard. Maybe it wasn't worth it. Maybe it was. So we're just kind of going to kind of let that develop organically. We're not going to push them into anything. If that's something that they really want to do, then we'll work with them on it.
Absolutely. That's really cool. So, Joe, I heard that you're a good whistler. Can you, like, I'm wondering how Claude would whistle. I know it's a random question.
Did I whistle in the game? I might have whistled in the game.
Did you?
I've been paid to whistle several times. Gosh. Yeah, I don't know. I might have whistled in the game. So you're asking, like, how would Claude whistle?
Yeah, like, can you give us a little whistle?
Yeah, I guess so. Claude, what's the song he sings? Something like that.
I love it. Awesome. That's so cool. Well, Joe, I just want to wrap up by saying thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Do you have any last words for our audience, like where we can find you? Tell us, you know, about your book launch again. Just give us that last push here.
Yeah, so there's not many Joe Zijas in the world, so pretty much Joe Zija, Z-I-E-J-A, everywhere on the internet, on Twitter, on Twitch, on YouTube. My Twitch show is twice a week, Tuesdays at 4 Pacific and Thursdays at 8 Pacific. My book launch is happening on Twitch. I decided not to do an in-store launch, so we're going to do a Twitch launch party on September 17th at 6 p.m. at twitch.tv/JoeZija. We'll do some Q&A, I'll do some live reading, a bunch of giveaways, all the random antics that we have been getting up to on Twitch. And yeah, that's about it. You can find my books, if you're interested in my books, which I do narrate myself for the audiobook versions, but they're pretty much anywhere books are sold. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, some local bookstores have them.
Fantastic. Thank you again. And I really look forward to, you know, continuing to watch your journey unfold. And hopefully we'll see you at the next VO event or Voice Arts Awards or who knows.
Awesome. That'd be great. Thank you so much.
All the best to you, Joe. Take care.
You too. See ya.
Okay. Bye.
Oh, is that it?